next class will be on man's opportunity. Man's opportunity limited by time. And in connection to that, let's turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to rend and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also he hath set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life. And also, that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it, that men should fear before him. That which hath been is now, and that which is to be hath already been. And God requireth that which is past. And moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, that wickedness was there, and the place of righteousness, that iniquity was there. I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time there for every purpose and for every work. I said in my heart concerning the estate of the sons of men, that God might manifest them, and that they might see that they themselves are beasts. For that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beasts. Even one thing befalleth them. As one dieth, so dieth the other. Yea, they have all one breath, so that a man hath not no preeminence above the beasts, for all is vanity. All go into one place, all are of the dust, and all turn to dust again. Who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward, the spirit of the beast that goeth downward to the earth? Wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own work, for that he is that is his portion. For what shall bring him to see what shall be after him? Let's now give our attention to our brother Tommy Asbell, who will speak on this chapter of Ecclesiastes, man's opportunity limited by time.
Members of the Clinton, Arkansas Ecclesia send their greetings to you all here, and those of us who are here, a fairly good number, I think there's 8 or 9 of us here now, but we're glad to be able to be here to show our support for the Orlando Ecclesia, their gathering, and the things that they stand for, and the doctrinal positions that they have assumed. We agree in all those things, and in trying times such as these, it's good to know that we're not alone in the struggle for life. This third chapter of Ecclesiastes seems to be divisible into 4 sections, and those 4 sections are a divinely appointed timetable, which can be seen in verses 1 through 8. And then in verses 9 through 15, there is a gladness and a joy for those who would willingly submit themselves to God's appointed times. And in verses 16 through 18, to these submissive individuals, there is a time of judgment. And then in verses 19 through 22, there is a common end to all flesh. So that's more or less the way the third chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes can be subdivided. Solomon's prospectus on time and man's relation to it is an important aspect of this particular study, for it is essential that we be acutely aware of the limitations of time. Everything that we do is governed by time. Even our very lives are subject to determined limits that have been set by the Eternal Spirit. In the first 8 verses of this chapter, the word time is used 29 times, and the Hebrew word for time is adar, pronounced adar, and it's defined as to advance, to pass on, to continue, to pass by, or to take away. And Merriam-Webster says that time is a non-spatial, that is, not occupying space, a non-spatial continuum that is measured in terms of events which succeed one another from past through present into the future. Time is actually a very complex series of calculations, that has to do with gravitational and relative velocity time dilation. But for our consideration this morning, the important aspect of time is our specific and our individual relation to it and how we perceive time. The important aspect of time is our individual relation to it and how we perceive time. Whether we see ourselves as passing through time or that time is passing us by, it makes no difference. The only thing that really matters is that as each second ticks away, we have much less of it to work with. We see time in 3 general categories. We see time in the past, in the present, and also in the future. There's the past, whose reality is bound up in historical data and accounts, in pictures, in monuments, in memories. Though real for the time, then present, the past no longer exists. We live in the present, but only for a millisecond at a time. What was the present immediately becomes the memory as it fades farther and farther into the past. Though we plan for, and we have hopes, and we have dreams of the future, we at the same time are made to realize the uncertainty of the future. Why? Because it doesn't exist. The future does not exist as yet. No doubt the future will come, but will we be part of it? And this is where our relation to time becomes all important, for it encompasses the word uncertain. For the most part, I think we all feel pretty secure in our lives, and rightly so. But the reality of it all is that our very lives hang precariously by a thread, and that thread may break at any moment. And then if it does, then our lives and all that we've done simply become someone else's memories. We're reminded of James, the 4th chapter, in verse 14, where the apostle writes, "Whereas ye know not what shall come on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even as a vapor that appeareth for a little time, and then it vanisheth away. For everything there is an appointed time and a season to every purpose." A season is a fixed moment in time, but not necessarily of specific duration, but with determined limits, as the will of the Eternal Spirit may dictate. Job, the 7th chapter, in verse 1 says, Is there not an appointed time unto man? Are not his days like the days of an hireling? Here in this seventh chapter of Job, a hireling refers to a worker or a servant who is hired on a temporary basis. He might work for a day, he might work for a week, he might work for a year, but when his employment expires, he's gone, he vanishes, it's over. Psalms 89 verse 47 says, "Remember how short my time is, wherefore thou hast made us, or made men, in vain." And of course we can all quote Psalm 90 and verse 10, which says, "The days of our years are 80, and if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away." We know by the scripture and by our own experiences that the seasons of our lives are of uncertain duration. We think that 70 to 80 years is a long time, but it depends on where we're standing in relation to that time period. If we're a very young person looking at 70 to 80 years, yeah, that's a long time. But when you're considering 70 years and you're 66 years old, 70 years is all but finished. It's all but over. So as Einstein said, time is relative, and so also is our perception and our relation to it. It has been suggested that a proper heading for Ecclesiastes chapter 3 should be, as we've already had on our overhead, that man's opportunity is limited by time. Now, we don't intend to be morbid, nor do we suggest any undue anxiety about our limited amount of time, but only that we should think clearly and unambiguously and keep our lives and our thinking in perspective as is relative to the scripture and to time. And we ask each of you here this morning to keep these things in the most sensible corner of your heart as we examine the context of this third chapter of Ecclesiastes. At the book of Ecclesiastes in our Bibles, we see the heading Ecclesiastes or the Preacher. And here the word Ecclesiastes is an appellative. It's used to describe a person, a place, or a thing. And appellatives are things like doctors, lawyers, mothers, fathers, and that sort of thing. And Ecclesiastes is a transliteration of the Hebrew word Koheleth. And Koheleth, which means an assembler or a convener, is from a root which is K-A-H-A-L, and it means to assemble or to gather. And since the word was transliterated, we can easily see the connection to the Greek word ekklesis, and the meaning is practically the same. Ecclesiastes in the Hebrew is from Koheleth, and it means to assemble or to convene. It was transliterated. It wasn't translated. It was transliterated, which means that it has a very close connection to the Greek word ekklesis, which means an invitation to come out. An ecclesia is an assembly of people convened in consequence of their acceptance of the invitation to come out. So then we see the connection between Ecclesiastes and the Hebrew word ekklesis. So when we associate this appellative, Koheleth, to the preacher, that is Solomon, we see that he is the one who assembles or collects proverbs and expressions of godly wisdom and understanding. This collection of wisdom and true sayings recorded here is a reflection of the wisdom and the understanding granted to Solomon, who was the son of the one who was a man after God's own heart, needless to say, David. So, let's look now at the third chapter of 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 3. Beginning of verse 5. And we'll read through verse 12. In Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night. And God said, "Ask what I shall give thee." And Solomon said, "Thou hast showed unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy according as he walked before thee in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness that thou hast given him a son to sit on the throne as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David thy father. And I am but a little child. I know not how to go in nor to come out. And thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered for or counted for multitude. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this thy so great a people?" And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon was asked, that Solomon had asked this thing, and God said unto him, "Because thou hast asked for this thing, and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither hast thou asked riches for thyself, nor hast asked for the life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment, behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee." So the wisdom of Solomon is that was granted to him by a divine oracle, as a result, the words of Solomon reflect the wise counsel of Yahweh. And as we read this book, the book of Ecclesiastes, it becomes obvious almost immediately what Solomon's opinion of man and the struggles amount to. Look at Ecclesiastes, the first chapter, again. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Verse 2, verses 13 and 14. And this is... Oh, somebody said something. I'm hearing things in my old age. Ecclesiastes, first chapter. Chapter 1, verse 2. It says, "Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity." Look at verses 13 and 14. "And I gave my heart to seek and to search out wisdom concerning all things that are done under the heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit." Here the word vanity is from the Hebrew habel habeo, and it means emptiness, something that is unsatisfactory or something that is transitory, something empty, meaningless, pointless, or something that is totally and completely unsatisfactory. And that's how Solomon, let me back up, that's how it appears that Solomon saw these things. And that's, Solomon didn't witness all the things that was going on under the sun and say, "Boy, this is just all vanity and vexation of spirit. It's meaningless, it's pointless, it's empty." Well, he understood, Solomon understands that, yes, there is a purpose for what's going on here. He just hasn't explained it yet, but he's going to. And that's the point of this study of Ecclesiastes. Solomon understood that there, in fact, is a purpose, that everything is not vanity. Unenlightened, it's vanity. Enlightenment changes things. So then the idea of vanity here, or the idea that Solomon is presenting, is that man in general is in a state of transition. He's working to enjoy the fruits of his labor and to take pleasure in the gifts that the Creator has provided for mankind. Now, let's go back to Ecclesiastes, third chapter. And I know this is going to seem like a lot of reading, but we're going to read the first 8 verses of that third chapter once again. It says, "To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. There's a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to cast away, a time to rend, a time to sow, a time to keep silence, a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time of war, and a time of peace. And as we read those things, I would like for you to note there that there are, in fact, 28 things that are enumerated, and we know that 28 is a multiple of what? Of 7. Okay, so does that spell out for us some sort of completeness in the seasons of man's life? Is there some sort of completeness that Solomon is talking about here for the appointed times of man's life? Because he is born, there's a time to be born, and there's a time to die, and all the other things that are enumerated there in those first 8 verses are things that happen between the time we're born and the time we die. It's a complete cycle of life. All of these things that we do are a complete cycle of life. And when we're finished with it, it's complete and it's over. So as we see man then occupying his time and his labor and taking pleasure in the fruit of his doing, Solomon then asks the question in verse 9. He says, "What profit hath he that worketh wherein he laboreth?" What profit is there in all these things? Because he'd already said, everything's vanity and vexation of spirit. So what profit is there in doing all these things and that he enumerates in those first 8 verses? What's the point of all that if everything is vanity and vexation of spirit? Man is born, he lives, he works, he loves, he dies, and a preacher says that it's all empty, it's all meaningless, and it's all pointless. It seems as if the preacher here is painting a pretty bleak picture of man and his doings. Solomon said, there is a time to be born, there's a time to die, and all the other things that we read of in these first 8 verses here are things that happen in between. During the cycle of our lives, we work, we gather together, and when we die, we have no more than we had to begin with. It's as if we never existed. So we're forced to ask ourselves, is that all there is, or are there other matters involved here that are being written of? Are there other matters for us to consider? We think that Solomon, being filled with understanding and wisdom, has established the fact of the meaninglessness and the emptiness of man's existence without a higher purpose. And then, if you will, look at verse 18 of chapter 3. Verse 18 says, "I said in my heart concerning the estate of the sons of men, that God might manifest them, and that they might see that they themselves are beasts." And look at verse 14. "I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Whatever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it, and God doeth it that men should fear before him." God doeth these things that men should fear before him. He does all these things that men might revere before him, not to tremble and in fear, but to give glory, to give honor, and to give respect to God. That's the purpose of him being here. He's doing this that men might revere before him. That's the purpose of it. God is showing us all these things. In verse 1 of the first chapter, it says, "To everything there is an appointed time and a season to every purpose." To God and those who would attempt to understand the meaninglessness of the vanities of this life, there is in fact a purpose. And the word purpose here is derived from the Hebrew kephets, and it suggests a delightsome, pleasant, desirable matter. There is a purpose There's a reason for all of this, and that word purpose there spells out quite clearly that it is a desirable, delightsome, pleasant matter that God has prepared for all these things. And Solomon sees the unenlightened person as being vanity and vexation of spirit, but enlightened man, and he who understands the meaninglessness of all these things, there is a delightsome, pleasant, desirable matter involved in all this. Ecclesiastes, the 12th chapter, verse 14 says, "For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil." Are we not being told that there is a day of reckoning where the works of His people are to be made manifest? Ecclesiastes, the 12th chapter, verse 13, it says, "Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man." And the word duty here, fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. And this word duty here is from the Hebrew word D-A-B-A-R, and one of the definitive terms of that word is purpose. A delightsome, pleasant, desirable matter. There is, brethren, a delightsome, pleasant, desirable matter prepared for those who realize and understand how this whole purpose is to be worked out. God not only has a purpose, and that being the glorification of Himself in the earth, as Habakkuk 2, verse 14 says, "For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." But that purpose extends to those who fear God and keep His commandments, and they will be the means of that very glorification that the prophet Habakkuk speaks of. God intends to people the earth with moral and physical likenesses of Himself. He intends to be glorified in all the earth, and He intends to be glorified in individuals who reflect the glory that God is giving them. And with regards to that, we want to do a few readings here. And let's go over to the book of Revelation. These verses that we're going to be reading here explain how that manifestation will take place in the age to come, and how they in fact will give glory unto God. Revelation 2, verse 7. Revelation 2, verse 7 says, "He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the ecclesias. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God." And drop down to verse 17. "He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the ecclesias. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna, and will give him a white stone, and in the stone a new name written, which no man knoweth, saving he that receiveth it." In verses 26 through 28, "And he that overcometh and keepeth my works unto the end, to him will I give power over the nations. And he shall rule them with a rod of iron, as the vessels of a potter shall they be broken to shivers, even as I received of my Father. And I will give him the morning star, and he that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the ecclesias." Chapter 3 of Revelation, verse 5. "He that overcometh, the same shall be clothed in white raiment, and I will not blot his name out of the book of life, but I will confess his name before my Father and before his angel." Verse 12. "To him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God. And he shall go out no more, and I will write upon him the name of my God, and the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem, which cometh down out of God, out of heaven, from my God, and I will write upon him my new name." In verse 21, "To him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and have sat down with my Father in his throne." The other factors of Solomon's wise sayings, like there being a time to plant, to harvest, to build up, to tear down, a time to embrace, a time to love, a time to heal, a time to speak, a time to keep silent, and that's a hard one, to make war, a time of peace, and so on. If all these things are done in accordance to the will of the Father and are done in an effort to glorify the name of the Eternal Spirit in our individual lives, they no doubt will help determine our fate in an age where the concept of time will be perceived much differently. At present, all of man's activities are governed by time. Time hedges about us in everything that we do. We are imprisoned by it from the moment that we are conceived. Time binds us with mighty chains that only omnipotence can break. And in this third chapter of Ecclesiastes, there is a depiction of the purpose of God with mankind. In verses 1 through 8, there is a divinely appointed timetable for all human activity. Verses 9 through 15, they speak of the joy and the gladness for all those who willingly submit to the purpose of these appointed times. In verses 19 through 22, tells us that there is a common end to all flesh. Now, let's go back over to Ecclesiastes, and I want to read verses 9 through 15. Ecclesiastes 3, 9 through 15. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given unto the sons of men to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also he hath set the world in their hearts, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor, it is the gift of God. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it that men should fear before him, and that which hath been is now, and that which is to be already hath already been, and God requireth that which is past. Hebrews 11th chapter, Hebrews the 12th chapter, we think, compares nicely here to what Solomon says in these verses. We note that verse 10 says that we are to be exercised by the travail of life, and when we are exercised, it provides meaning to the struggle that we're going through. And Hebrews 12 verse 11 says, "Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby." And needless to say, the key word here is to be exercised. When our lives are beset with trial, with trouble, with tribulation, our spirits can be vulnerable, and at times they can be defeated. In my experience, I've thought that if these things were a test of my faith, or some of the things that I've been going through were a test of my faith, that is, if I'm being weighed in the balances, then no doubt I'm losing the battle. If these things are a test of my faith, if I'm being weighed in the balances, I'm certain to be found wanting. Yet this is where our faith should kick in and come to our rescue. This is what the whole thing is all about. This is where faith should come to our rescue. When we feel like we're at our wit's end, if we feel like our faith is about to be overcome, then this is where we should stand up and reevaluate those things that we believe. The words of Paul come to mind when he said in 1 Corinthians 10:13, "There is no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will rather with the temptation make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it. Even though time is often perceived as our enemy, it can, however, also be our ally. Time gives us a chance to reflect on our struggle. It gives us a time to analyze our faith. It gives us a time to analyze ourselves. And more importantly, it gives us a chance to heal, because time tends to change our perspective on things. So instead of feeling defeated, we can be thankful that the Eternal Spirit is still working with us, that we have not been turned over to a reprobate mind, but rather that we are being exercised thereby in an effort to determine if our characters are suitable for the purpose of Yahweh. Is this what James was talking about when he said in his first chapter, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience." And patience, of course, means endurance. And this is one of those things, is I go by, I keep thinking about all the things that happened in my life and in the life of other people, and I think it seems like there's something happening to those people all the time. Something's going on with those people all the time. Something happened in my life all the time. That's when we should be thankful right there that something is going on. It's when we sit around and nothing's happening, everything's just rosy and everything is peachy keen and there's nothing happening in our life, that's when we're in trouble. Because we have to fear that God may have turned us over to a reprobate mind because nothing is happening in our life. Count it all joy when you fall into these diverse temptations. When nothing's happening, perk up. In verse 15, this third chapter of Ecclesiastes, "That which hath been is now, and that which is to be already hath been, and God requireth that which is past." The last phrase of this verse, that is, "God requireth that which is past," is more understandably rendered, "God seeketh that which is driven away." The events of man's cycle of life continually recur. Each cycle seems to pursue the one that preceded it in an endless circle, as it were. This unchanging sequence of events is illustrated by man's love, his hate, his wars, his labors, and so on. These are performed again and again by each succeeding generation, and this is precisely how God has arranged things, that from each generation some, with an honest and a good heart, will pursue righteousness and truth, and this will continue until God's timetable demands that the era of judgment has finally arrived. Verse 17 says, "I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time there for every purpose and for every work." The word "judge" is from the Hebrew shaphat, and its implication is to vindicate or to punish. So there is a time of vindication for righteousness and a punishment for wickedness. And during these cycles of life, Yahweh allows transgressions of his laws and of his statutes, but only so the works and the activities of those righteous few might be made manifest. During the cycles of life, Yahweh allows transgressions of his laws and his statutes, but he only does so that the works and the activities of those righteous few might become manifest in his sight. So as sure as the believer lives his life, so also is the appointed day when the believer shall give account for those things which he hath done in the flesh. 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, verse 10 says, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things done in his body according to that he hath done, whether it be good or whether it be bad." Ecclesiastes, the 3rd chapter, verses 19 through 22. For that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beast. Even one thing befalleth them. As the one dieth, so dieth the other. Yea, they all have one breath, so that if... As the one dies, so dies the other. Yea, they all have one breath, so that a man hath no preeminence above a beast, for all is vanity. All go into one place, all are of the dust, and all shall turn to dust again. Who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward, or the spirit of the beast that goeth downward to the earth? Wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than for a man should, that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion, for who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? These verses set in perspective the nature of man, and that man should realize that in nature his life hath no preeminence above a beast. For as the one dieth, so dieth the other, and all are of the dust, and unto it shall they return. The spirit of man is filled with pride, and his soaring ego and his lofty ambitions make him think that he is much better than he actually is. So then man, by nature, thinks himself to be something that he is not, when in reality he is only flesh and blood, and the scope of his being in life is extremely limited and unenlightened, he is much the same as the beast of the earth. It appears to me that Solomon has laid before us the stark reality of life, but the thing that can separate us from the destiny of the beast and those who conduct themselves as such is our own intellectual abilities God has given to us, for if used properly, these abilities can give glory to the one who created us. God has graciously revealed his plan and his purpose to his creation, and through that revelation, his intent is to ultimately fill the earth with his own glory, made manifest through a company of beings who, through trial and judgment, will be made into moral and physical likenesses of the one who hath created them. So then, having an intellectual ability above that of the beast of the earth, we can choose to follow God's laws and his commandments. Solomon makes us aware that time is moving and that we only have a very limited amount of time. The choices that we make now will determine whether we, as the beast, shall return to dust to spend eternity, or shall we see the light of day when the trump of God shall sound and the dead in Christ shall arise. So the vanity and the vexation of spirit that Solomon witnessed under the sun is seen in the workings of man during his appointed time on earth. But in spite of man's wickedness, there is, in fact, a higher purpose. Brother Thomas wrote, "When sin entered into the world, and death by sin, a rebellion commenced against God which hath never been put down effectually from that day to this. It has ever gained strength. It is at the present crisis more defiant of his authority than ever, but he has declared that things will not always continue thus, for he has sworn by his own life, saying, as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord." Ecclesiastes, the third chapter, man's opportunity limited by time. So the question is, what shall you do with yours?